Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take sources you send us, dig through them, and pull out the most crucial, fascinating bits. Basically, we do the heavy lifting so you're in the know.
And today, we're tackling a transcript you pointed us to, Episode 1, Operation Tailwind Presentation from the Military Tales YouTube channel. This is their first episode, right? And it really zeroes in on this one specific operation.
Exactly. And it's not just someone reading a history book. This is footage from a reunion held at the Tennessee Museum of Aviation. You've got the actual veterans there, Army Special Forces guys, the A-1 Sky Raider pilots, Marine helicopter pilots, the Air Force Covey pilots.
Yeah, all the key players who supported these covert ops. And this presentation, this episode, it's all about Operation Tailwind, a really deep dive into their firsthand experiences.
It gives you this amazing window into a classified, super dangerous mission during the Vietnam War. This first episode really sets the scene for what went down.
Mm-hmm. And the transcript, it just throws you straight in. A 72-hour combat mission way inside Laos. We're talking 16 Americans, plus around 120 indigenous mountain yard fighters. Constant danger.
And the presentation itself calls it part of the secret war. You know, this episode does a great job peeling back the layers on that.
So let's unpack how this first episode frames the situation. The venue itself, the Tennessee Museum of Aviation, is significant. It honors veterans of these clandestine ops in Cambodia, North Vietnam, Laos.
Right. And they mention active duty folks being there too, which kind of connects Tailwind, the focus of this episode, to the military today. It's not just dusty history.
Definitely not. And the intro to Operation Tailwind in this episode is key. You've got this small team, SF guys and their allies, going way, way beyond the normal prairie fire operational area in Laos.
Can you remind us what prairie fire was?
Sure. Prairie fire was basically the code name for the ongoing secret recon missions across the border into Laos. So Tailwind was already operating in a, let's say, very sensitive area, and then they pushed even further. This first episode makes it clear this was exceptional right from the start.
Okay. They mentioned some key figures in the presentation, too. Mel Swanson. He led this Sky Raider unit. Those are the A-1s, right? The propeller planes.
That's them. Tough, reliable planes, crucial for close air support. And then there's John Tiltmeyer, a Special Forces team leader. He wrote books like Across the Fence, On the Ground. Really respected chronicler of these SOG operations.
So he literally wrote the book on operating across the fence. And this episode shows just how far they went for Tailwind.
Yeah, the transcript from episode one really highlights that. About 20 kilometers beyond those already deep prairie fire boundaries. This was September 1970. And the context, which the episode explains, is that the CIA was in a really tight spot over on the Bolovins Plateau. Their operations were seriously threatened.
Okay. So Tailwind wasn't the main event initially. It was a diversion.
Essentially, yes. According to this episode, a diversion was desperately needed to pull North Vietnamese Army, the NVA, away from the CIA's operation. And that job fell to Captain Gene McCarley and his B Company. 16 Americans, plus the Montagnards, tasked with creating a ruckus east of the main CIA action.
16 guys to divert potentially thousands of NVA. That's ambitious.
It is. And McCarley's strategy, as laid out here, was vital. He didn't go for a typical slam operation, you know, hit hard and stay put. He insisted on a keep moving approach, constant motion.
To avoid becoming a static target, right?
Exactly. Keep the NV guessing, make it harder for them to pin the team down. A really smart tactical call, probably learned the hard way. This first episode emphasizes this as key to their survival, especially early on.
Makes sense. They also mention a six-part story online on sock-smc.com that details the whole thing day by day. Yes. So this episode is like a focused snapshot.
Right, a very intense snapshot. Okay, let's move into day one, as recounted in this episode, the insertion. This wasn't just an Army show.
No, it sounds like a real team effort. Army SF on the ground, sure. But getting them there, that took the Marines.
Yeah, and their CH-53 helicopters. Big birds. Needed for that long flight, 60 kilometers into Laos, remember. 40K past their usual playground. The episode really stresses the logistics involved just getting started.
And it wasn't smooth sailing from the get-go, was it? This episode mentions they got a warning on September 3rd, details on the 4th. The mission. Be the bait. Draw the NVA off the CIA.
Clear mission, yeah. But the intel on the actual landing zone area, pretty thin, as we learn in this first episode. They knew NVA were around, probably supply caches, depots, but where? How many? That uncertainty just dialed up the risk factor massively.
And the loadout instructions tell a story too, don't they? The episode says, light on food, heavy on ammo, and C4.
Tells you exactly what they expected. Heavy contact, each man carrying a serious amount of firepower and explosives.
So after some weather delays, they finally lift off on September 14th. And the reception wasn't exactly welcoming.
Not at all. The transcript mentions taking ground fire while still in the choppers. One CH-53 got hit badly, four guys wounded before they even touched dirt.
Wow. That's brutal. And then they land, and the episode describes this weird, quiet, like being in the tomb.
Yeah, an eerie silence. No birds, no jungle sounds, just nothing. Very unsettling.
But that didn't last.
Nope. Episode one says within 30 minutes, first contact. A small group of NVA, maybe three or four, on a trail. A quick firefight, just a taste of what was coming.
And then the big discovery. This is a major point in the episode, right? The convoys.
Huge. Long lines of enemy supplies, 300, 400 yards long, just stuffed with rockets, ammo, a massive logistical train right there for the taking.
Incredible find. What did they do?
The demo guys, Bernie and Craig Smith, got to work planting time charges all along it. And then this surreal moment, the episode captures a field phone, starts ringing while the charges are ticking down.
You're kidding. What happened?
Well, as the story goes in the episode, one of the guys joked, should we answer it? You know, classic gallows humor. Then boom, huge explosions. Went on for 12, 14 hours as all that ammo cooked off.
Unbelievable. So day one ends with massive fireworks.
Pretty much. Plus, follow-up airstrikes from gunships, green gunships, likely AC-119s or maybe AC-47s and the A-1 Sky Raiders cleaning up anything left. But yeah, constant contact, varying intensity all through day one and into the night. A rough start, as this first episode makes very clear.
So days two and three, according to the episode.
Yeah.
Basically more of the same, just relentless.
That sounds like it. Continuous fire from the rear, the flanks, the front. McCarley's keep moving tactic was clearly being tested to its limit, but it was likely what kept them alive.
And they were heavily reliant on air support.
Absolutely. Those A1 Sky Raiders, the SPDs, become heroes in this story, a theme hammered home in the episode. They could get low and slow, put ordnance right where it was needed, and pull the team's chestnuts out of the fire time and again. Indispensable.
By day three, the episode conveys a real sense of exhaustion setting in.
Totally. They finally had to set up a defensive perimeter to try and hold on. And that night, the NVA surrounded them. It turned into this insane grenade fight. They estimated tossing 500, 600 grenades themselves.
500 or 600. From maybe 100 guys total, including the Montagnards.
Yeah. Just trying to keep the NVA back. Plus, they were taking incoming 40-millimeter rockets. It must have been terrifying.
This is where the bigger air assets came in, the AC-130s.
Exactly. The Air Force AC-130 gunships, call sign Spectre, flying B-52s of close air support, basically, they provided crucial cover, especially at night, pouring fire down around the team's position, sometimes dangerously close.
Right. The episode mentions fire coming in really close. And that bizarre story about the pheasant.
Huh. Yeah. A wounded soldier trying to grab a pheasant near where the Spectre was firing, and he gets clipped by debris from the cannon rounds. It just shows you the sheer strangeness of combat. High drama and absurdity side by side.
So, day four. The episode paints this as a major turning point, right? They run into something big.
Very big. A battalion-sized NVA base camp, much larger than anything they'd anticipated or encountered so far. They didn't just bypass it either.
They assaulted it, this small team.
They deployed and hit it. The episode estimates maybe 50, 70 NVA casualties resulted, and inside they found the jackpot.
The intelligence bunker.
Right. An underground bunker packed with maps, documents, crucial intel. They grabbed it, stuffed it into rucksacks. So the mission wasn't just a diversion anymore. They had vital intelligence. That's a key point this episode makes.
But the danger wasn't over. Far from it.
No way. The Covey writer, the FAC pilot overhead, their eyes in the sky sends down a chilling warning. Thousands of NVA troops are moving in, massing to surround them. The situation just went critical.
And then the gas mask order comes down. But it wasn't enemy gas.
No, that's the twist in the episode. It was friendly CS gas, tear gas that might be dropped to help them break contact if things got really bad. Imagine the confusion, especially for the Montagnards without masks. Disorienting for everyone.
So, guided by Covey, they start moving towards a potential extraction zone, an LZ, under fire from everywhere.
Continuous fire, yeah. And the LZ itself, as described in the episode, was far from ideal. Small, tall grass. Really tough for big helicopters like the CH-53s to get into, especially under heavy fire. The tension in this part of the narrative is palpable.
And the extraction attempts? The episode details these, and they sound terrifying.
Harrowing is the word. First CH-53 gets in, takes wounded, light fire. Second one, moderate fire. But the third one, oh man, heavy fire. NVA swarming the LZ as it tries to lift off. It was crammed, maybe 50 people on board.
And tragedy strikes in that helicopter.
Yeah. The door gunner shot through the neck during takeoff. The chopper itself took a massive hit, small arms, maybe 0.51 caliber, probably hit fuel or hydraulics. Then that awful radio call the episode includes.
The mayday call. We've been hit. I'm at 4,000 feet and I'm going down. Just chilling.
Absolutely chilling. But then the miracle this episode highlights. The pilot somehow manages to wrestle it down, crash landing in a small jungle opening. And nobody on board was killed in the crash itself.
Incredible skill and luck. The episode mentions the impact, though, teeth crunching. Gives you a sense of the violence of the landing.
Definitely. Their first thought, though, get everyone out, check the wreckage. Then another CH-53, a dust-off medevac bird, swooped in and picked up the survivors from the crash site.
So they finally get back to base camp. But the reception wasn't exactly cheers and backslaps initially.
Not according to the episode, no. Higher command was apparently pretty unhappy. Lost aircraft, millions of dollars worth of ordnance expended. About $5 million, they estimated.
Ouch. But that changed.
It did, and fast. Once they analyzed those documents, those maps from the bunker, it pinpointed an entire NVA battalion nobody knew was there. Suddenly, the cost, the risk, it was vindicated by the value of that intelligence. A key outcome emphasized at the end of this first episode.
Let's talk about the pilots. Because this episode gives them a voice, too, and their side is just as intense. Doc Persky, piloting that final CH-53.
Right. His account is incredible. First one engine goes, then the second one. He has to perform an auto-rotation, basically gliding the helicopter down without engine power, using the rotor like a windmill.
Which is hard enough in a normal situation.
Extremely hard. But doing it with a fully loaded CH-53 over dense jungle after being shot up, unprecedented, really, and he pulled off that crash landing. Just amazing airmanship.
And the communication problems the episode mentioned. The down-door gunner's mic being stuck open.
Yeah, adding another layer of chaos. The pilot couldn't easily talk to his crew or other aircraft during the most critical moments. It's honestly staggering they survived.
We also hear from another Marine pilot in the episode, unnamed, just a young first lieutenant back then. He talks about the SF guy's professionalism, how his squadron usually did support roles, but knew this one, Mission 7200, was different. The big enchilada, they called it.
Yeah, they knew it was major. But the initial brief apparently suggested a more benign insertion and maybe even walking out. The reality, as this episode shows again and again, was completely different.
Their choppers were shot up right from the insertion.
Heavily damaged, yeah. A bad sign from the start. Then the emergency extraction order comes, but they face this frustrating 3.5 day wait. And little things, like the episode mentions, using unfamiliar ground gas masks during the chaos of the final extraction, just added stress for everyone, air and ground.
Art Picone, a senior Marine captain in the presentation, apparently gave a pretty blunt picture of what normal extractions were like.
The tailwind, as episode one makes clear, was anything but normal. The fire during that final pickup was just overwhelming.
The wingman's account in the episode really puts you there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Feeling like you're the target, tracers everywhere.
Absolutely, and barely having enough power to even lift off with all the people crammed aboard, hovering on the edge.
And then an engine fails during takeoff.
Right at the worst possible moment. That transition to forward flight, getting translational lift, becomes absolutely critical, life or death. He mentions the chin bubble, the helicopter's front window actually hitting trees as they clawed their way out.
But even then, it wasn't over for that crew.
No. Flying back, the second engine gives out. That forces the auto rotation we talked about down into a canyon, aiming for a tiny clearing, a sort of island in a riverbed, to try and minimize casualties on impact.
A hard landing. A crash, really. The pilot chipped his lip, the episode notes. Seems like a small injury, given what could have happened.
Incredibly small. Then SAR search and rescue aircraft came in to pick them up. And there's that moment of dark humor the episode includes. Chip Cipolla, the maintenance officer, seeing the banged up pilot. You can just feel the immense respect these pilots had for the SOG teams on the ground after going through that.
Some moments in this just seem surreal. Gene McCarley, after the crash, waking up and seeing one of his soldiers, Maurice, just standing there in the creek smiling.
Yeah, after everything they'd just been through. 4 days of hell, a helicopter crash. And there's Maurice, Okay, smiling. It's a powerful image relayed in the episode.
This brings us to the Covey pilots, the forward air controllers, or FACs. Crucial role, right?
Absolutely essential. The episode mentions Larry Smith and Paul Cable, though Cable apparently arrived post-tailwind. These guys flew light aircraft, like O2s, low and slow over the battlefield. But the key was often the guy in the back seat, the Covey rider.
Who were they?
Experienced Special Forces guys themselves, former recon team leaders, often called 1-0s. They knew the ground situation intimately and could talk directly to the ground team and the attack aircraft pilots, the sky raiders, the gunships, the fast movers.
So they're coordinating everything from above.
Pretty much. Directing the airstrikes, calling in napalm, guiding the fighters. Like Paul Cable says in the episode, the FAC is the conductor of the orchestra, making sure all that firepower goes where it needs to without hitting the friendlies. It's an incredibly complex and dangerous job.
And the episode highlights that coordination was successful. No friendly fire, despite how close the support was.
Which is remarkable under those conditions. Larry Smith, the episode notes, was involved from insertion to extraction, even talking Gene McCarley towards the LZ while they were under fire.
After the CH-53 crashed, there was an order to destroy it.
Yeah, standard procedure to protect sensitive equipment. But finding the wreck in that terrain, especially from the air, proved really difficult, as the episode mentions.
Okay, let's talk about the gas again, the CS gas. This episode gets into why and how it was used.
Right. We hear from Don Fell, an A-1 Sandy pilot from NKP Nakhon Phanom in Thailand. Sandy was the call sign for A-1s on rescue escort or close support missions. His specific task was unusual.
Not bombs or rockets?
No, canisters of CS gas, tear gas. The mission was to drop it directly over the friendly troops.
Over them. Why?
To break contact. The idea, as explained in the episode, was that the gas would overwhelm the nearby NVA, forcing them back, creating breathing room for the pinned down team to escape. It was a desperate measure for a desperate situation.
Flying low, dropping gas instead of bombs. Sounds like a weird mission profile for an A-1.
Very unusual. And he was the only plane available to do it at that critical moment. Plus, he was having engine trouble during the mission.
Jeez. Did it work?
Apparently, yes. Fell successfully dropped the canisters along the line of contact. The episode mentions hearing the enemy coughing and reacting to the gas over the radio. It likely did disorient the NVA enough to prevent them, say, throwing grenades into the escaping troops.
And Fell had his own drama getting home.
He did. He was asked to try and find and destroy the downed chopper afterwards, but low fuel and that dodgy engine meant he had to declare an emergency and divert to Da Nang. The engine quit completely as he landed. Another close call directly linked to tailwind.
We also hear from Tom Stump in the episode, another A-1 pilot involved on that chaotic fourth day.
Right. Flew a two-ship flight. His briefing stressed the large number of people needing extraction and how close they were to a known NVA hotspot. Plus, the weather was bad rain, low clouds.
Making it hard to even see the target.
Exactly. Took fire immediately on arrival, couldn't initially spot the team through the soup, but Gene McCarley on the ground managed to talk Stump's flight onto the enemy positions and mark the friendlies.
So, more close air support runs.
Multiple runs, yeah. Expended all their ordnance, had to fly back to Da Nang, rearm, refuel, and fly back into the fight for the final extraction phase. He actually witnessed the CH-53 go down.
It's amazing, as the episode notes, that no A-1s were actually shot down during all this.
Incredible, given the volume of fire. The episode also mentions F-4 Phantoms, the fast movers, adding their firepower. Their bombs could arrive almost silently before you even heard the jets, which must have been terrifying for the NVA.
And the NVA weren't just using small arms, right? There was heavier stuff.
Oh, yeah. The presentation confirms they faced artillery and anti-aircraft threats. These pilots were flying into serious danger every time. And that CS gas. It was something the SF teams carried themselves sometimes, precisely for breaking contact in emergencies like this.
The episode then really shifts focus to the sheer heroism and sacrifice involved.
Definitely. You hear from Mark McKenzie, a SAR pilot, talking about going back into the hot LZ to pick up the crew from the crashed helicopter Anthony Kraft's aircraft, the third CH-53, knowingly flying into that danger zone again.
And Bill Beard, a Cobra pilot from the Scarface squadron.
Yeah, the AH-1 Cobra attack helicopters provided vital fire support. Beard describes the launch day as chaotic, even mentions ordnance accidents happening. And that weird anecdote about a pet snake named Georgia where they stayed overnight, again, that touch of the surreal amidst the tension.
The episode provides some interesting historical context, too, about the Marines being stretched thin.
Right. Apparently, there was reluctance at high levels in the Marine Corps to commit so many of their prized Cobras and CH-53s. Message traffic between generals, mentioned in the episode, shows the strain on resources. These assets were in high demand everywhere.
But they went in. Beard flew his Cobra, providing cover for the extraction of the downed crew, dealing with gas mask issues, communication problems.
And McKenzie, the SAR pilot, number four in the sequence, initially thought he might not even have to go in, but he ended up being crucial, using that ladder rig for the extraction.
The ladder rig. That sounds unusual.
It was a hoist or ladder lowered from the helicopter. The episode mentions a gunner even hesitating about taking his heavy machine gun down the ladder, these split-second decisions under immense pressure.
McKenzie gets them aboard, takes off from that dangerous LZ, and his master caution light comes on. Another potential disaster averted.
Just constant peril. And another Cobra pilot, Harry, doing one last low pass to make absolutely sure no one was left behind. That commitment is powerful.
The episode lists the whole Air Armada involved CH-53 Deltas, AH-1 Cobras, A-1 Sky Raiders, OV-10s and O-2s as F-8s, the AC-130 Spectre. It really underscores the complexity.
And highlights again why the A-1 Sky Raider, the Cespedes and Sandys were so valued, their endurance, their payload, their ability to stay on station and deliver precise fire.
But the episode saves perhaps the most incredible story of individual heroism for Gary Michael Rose, the medic.
Absolutely. His story is central to the episode's depiction of courage. Wounded himself early on by an RPG fragment in the leg and hand, seriously injured.
But he kept working.
Kept working for days, treated dozens of casualties, both American SF and the Montagnards, used his rifle, his CR-15, as a crutch to get around, organized makeshift stretchers, just refused to stop.
And during the final extraction, the crash.
He was right there, still treating the wounded door gunner, pulling others from the burning wreckage, organizing defense, just unbelievable bravery and dedication.
He received the Distinguished Service Cross for it. And the episode mentions he was later considered for the Medal of Honor.
That's right. At the time of the presentation this episode covers, it required a special congressional waiver because so much time had passed. It's a testament to just how extraordinary his actions were. Note, Gary Rose was awarded the Medal of Honor in 2017. The sheer number of wounded on that mission, every American wounded at least once, 80 total casualties, including the Montagnards, tells you everything about the intensity.
The closing moments of the presentation, as captured in this episode, feel heavy with gratitude and remembrance.
Very much so. Thanks to the museum, deep appreciation for the veterans sharing these incredibly difficult stories, and a very somber, important reminder of those still missing the MIAs from the war, specifically mentioning Green Berets lost in Laos during this secret war.
You really feel the bond between these men in the episode, the respect they have for each other after going through something like that.
It's palpable. And there's a nice final touch in the episode, an anecdote about the effort it took to gather all these veterans together for the presentation, acknowledging the behind-the-scenes work to make it happen.
So diving into this first episode of the Military Tales series on Operation Tailwind, it's just incredibly impactful, isn't it? Hearing it directly from the people who lived it.
It really is. It gives you such a visceral understanding of the risks, the complexity, the sheer bravery involved, the cooperation between Army, Marines, Air Force, their indigenous allies, under impossible conditions. This episode is a powerful document.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think about the human cost, the sacrifices made, and the lasting impact on everyone involved. If you get a chance, definitely look for more information on Operation Tailwind, on the secret war in Laos. There's a lot more to uncover.
And it leaves you with a question, perhaps. When you hear stories of such courage, such resilience against overwhelming odds, what does that demand of us? How do we properly honor that sacrifice, especially for those, like the MIAs mentioned, who never made it home? Something to think about.